Money FM 89.3, best of prime time. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Amidst all of the uncertainty that's really hit economies and markets in the last couple of weeks, it seems that they at least stuck to script. We're talking about the Federal Reserve and their policy decision overnight, where the Federal Reserve started the first of a series of rate hikes to try and control inflation and normalize monetary policy in the United States. But did it really go to script? And how difficult was the decision, actually, given all of the new factors coming in from geopolitical headwinds and also economic risks coming from China, for instance? Well, today on Money FM 89.3, we are pleased to be joined by Mr. Tamer Big, who is the chief economist for DBS. And he's going to sit with us to share his insights and his thoughts on how the meeting from the Fed went and if this and what sort of risks they'll have to prepare for moving forward. Mr. Big, thank you so much for joining us today. Glad you made some time for us and welcome to the show, sir. It's always a pleasure to have you.
Thank you very much.
So a lot of expectations, projections, and news events, as we said, complicated or made more interesting the Fed's anticipated rate hike. But it seems that they more or less stuck the script, a quarter basis point rate hike. They also set the tone, at least, or the road for a series of rate hikes to bring interest rates up by the end of the year significantly. Give us your impression of the Fed's decision earlier this morning, and if you think they did actually go pretty much as expected.
I'd say so. I think the market has given a resounding verdict already. It did not get spooked, maybe for a few minutes after Jerome Powell, chairman of the FOMC, sounded rather hawkish. But I think it has been taken in strides because the Fed threaded the needle, in my view, which is to give a very well-focused view on the risks stemming from high inflation, but at the same time expressing a great deal of comfort about the jobs and overall economic growth outlook. Meaning, even as the Fed normalizes policy, whether it is through interest rate hikes or by quantitative tightening, it would find the economy being able to absorb that higher cost of funding, the higher cost of liquidity. And therefore, we can have a period over the next 2 years where growth stabilizes, say, around 2% or a little more. The job market stabilizes around, say, 3.5% unemployment, and inflation, instead of hanging around at 7-8%, comes down to about 2-3.5%. So I think that 3% inflation, 3.5% unemployment, and 2-ish growth is something that the markets can live with. And I think that's the biggest takeaway from today, that if they can manage to keep that balance, higher rates are going to be all right.
Now, I hate to ask questions of Captain Hindsight, because hindsight is 2020, but there were growing criticisms leading up to this meeting that the Fed was well behind the curve on inflation and is responsible for the situation we're actually in. And there are now questions as to whether or not the Fed can actually avoid maneuver what everyone's calling a soft landing, meaning raising rates while avoiding a possible recession in the world's largest economy. Can you talk to us about whether or not this is a fair criticism of the Fed from your point of view? And if so, can the Fed actually maneuver a soft landing for the world's largest economy?
Mr. Hindsight, of course, we can say that if the Fed had started tightening policy a little earlier, we would not have seen the sort of upward pressure we have seen in property prices or rent. Or goods inflation. But we also can say with some degree of confidence, even with Mr. Hindsight in our room, that as far as food inflation and energy inflation is concerned, and some of the bottlenecks we have seen in the global supply chain, no amount of Fed tightening could have addressed any of those issues. So I think partial criticism is okay. It is okay to say that the kind of unaffordability issues that US consumers are facing with respect to affordability of housing, the Fed could have probably done something. It surely did not need to keep on buying mortgage-backed securities all the way through last month. But I think we need to also be humble and appreciate that, you know, nobody really knows the counterfactual. If the Fed did not aggressively buy bonds back in 2020 and did not continue it through 2021, would we be seeing such a strong labor market? Isn't the flip side of high housing prices a high, very strong construction market. And therefore, the demand for those laborers wouldn't that have gone away if we didn't have a strong housing market. So yes, of course, the inflation numbers are uncomfortable from the perspective of a central bank that prides itself on its credibility of anchoring inflation expectations around 2 to 2.5%. Clearly, there is a risk that that inflation expectation may become unanchored if inflation continues to remain very, very high for a prolonged period, and therefore the Fed has a lot of work to do. Mm-hmm. But I would not necessarily criticize the Fed for its action over the last 2 years. I will judge it for its performance over the next 12 to 18 months.
And of course, the conversation also seemed so simple for the Fed leading up to last night's decision. But as we saw at the end of February, this was complicated by Russia's invasion of Ukraine, sparking stagflationary expectations. Also, the last couple of days, those growing lockdowns in China to contain COVID-19 cases also raising some concerns that could feed into some of these stagflationary expectations. By the way, stagflation, hard landings and soft landings, these seem to be big catchphrases everyone's talking about now in global economics. Do you think this played a part, perhaps, in the Fed becoming a bit more cautious and measured with regards to laying out that, yes, we're going to tighten policy, but this is the game plan, 25 basis points probably each time and nothing more aggressive at the for the time being?
There are multiple crosswinds at play. Even before the Russia-Ukraine crisis became front and center in newspapers and television, the Fed officials were at pains to convey to the market that a 50 basis point inaugural rate hike in March was almost out of the question. Why were they doing that? Because they had seen through the months of January and February, even before the Russian invasion, that money market conditions were beginning to tighten, financial conditions were beginning to tighten, and some of the flattening of the yield curve, the longer end of the spectrum, was already suggesting that the market was becoming a bit spooked about the outlook. Now, you want the market to take your words for its value, for its worth, and act accordingly so that you don't actually have to do a lot because your credibility alone accomplishes a lot. But at the same time, there was a question of the market getting a bit too ahead of itself with this fear of stagflation, with this fear of the economy suffering from substantial front loading of interest rate adjustment by the Fed. So even before Ukraine, the Fed officials made sure that the narrative around very strong front loaded rate hike was tempered. Mm-hmm. Now, what has happened since then, since February 24, is that the fear of another round of food and fuel inflation is now paramount, not just in the US, but in Singapore and elsewhere in the world. We have to see how prolonged the crisis in Europe is before we start talking about severe risk of stagflation. You have seen in the last couple of weeks, sharp increase, followed by a sharp capitulation of the metals market, of the energy market. Even wheat prices, which rose very, very sharply, have come down quite a bit. So these things are demonstrating significant amount of geopolitical risk premium than the actual supply-demand dynamic at play. I would like to think, and I would also like to hope, that the crisis in Ukraine is resolved quickly, and therefore major conflict-related inflationary outcome for which there's very little policy avenue to deal with would be avoided. And then we'll go back to the issue of whether the U.S. economy is overheated or not, whether there's a risk of a wage price spiral. But those would be with regards to demand conditions, general supply side bottlenecks, not something that comes because of the fallout of a war.
We're still speaking to Tamer Beg, the chief economist for DBS here on Money FM 89.3. We talk about the Federal Reserve's recent decision. We were talking, we touched on these rising energy prices that did also come back significantly in recent days. Given the fact that we've seen energy prices come back significantly in recent days, are these stagflation fears perhaps over? Or is this just more sign of volatility that will make the jobs of economists like yourself even harder?
I think the outlook has been uncharacteristically difficult for a while. It's not a new phenomenon for quarter one of 2022. Ever since the COVID pandemic hit, we have had to deal with shocks that are seismic in nature and largely not something that we expect to deal with on a day-to-day basis, whether it is the lockdown around the pandemic or now these sort of, you know, what was previously unthinkable invasion in a European country. So going forward, I think the risk of inflation remaining high, I think is greater than growth coming down very sharply. By and large, through this stress period of the last couple of months, global economy has done relatively well. We haven't really seen any major hit to expectation, confidence, investment, or consumption. So far, the data show that the supply chain disruption, the expectation of Fed rate hikes, or even the crisis in Ukraine have not caused a wholesale change in consumer or investor behavior. Therefore, I think that the coming 9-10 months that's remaining of 2022 would still be characterized by fairly decent demand. I'm not in the camp of severe slowdown in the growth outlook. Europe notwithstanding, I think Europe has some issues, but the generally speaking, Asia and the US. But at the same time, would inflation behave very well? Probably not, because in the near term, outlook for inflation with all these food and fuel issues will probably be problematic, and policymakers would have to act one way or the other.
All right. And tagging on to your last comment there, I mean, how might the Federal Reserve's decision influence the moves of other central banks, particularly those in this region, Mr. Baig?
I think it is very clear that Asian economies are not going to mirror the Fed's action one for one. They are not characterized by very strong economic outlook. Many countries in ASEAN in particular are barely coming out of the pandemic. They still have their tourism sector to open. They still have domestic unemployment and weak growth to deal with. So this should be the year when Asian growth begins to pick up, make up for the lost ground of the last 2 years. A situation like that, which in econ speak is one of large output gap, does not warrant major rate hikes or rate normalization, even if there is some inflation issue. So in Asia, food and fuel inflation, of course, are problematic from a social cohesion perspective, from political stability perspective. But at the same time, raising rates to deal with these sort of global shocks will not accomplish a whole lot. Of course, Asian central banks will not sit on the sideline. We've already seen the Monetary Authority of Singapore beginning to normalize policy. We've seen the Bank of Korea do the same. In the coming months and quarters, we will see central banks in Indonesia, India, perhaps even Thailand and Philippines hike rates once or twice, but not like the 5-6 rate hikes that we're expecting out of the U.S. So Asia will lag America, but it has good reasons to do so.
All right. And you wanted to touch on this before we ended the interview, Mr. Baig. The reduction of the Fed's massive balance sheet, I believe it's coming close to about $9 trillion U.S. dollars. And they say that they might lay the framework out actually for doing this in the May meeting. But the question is this a necessary thing for the Fed to do, given they've had trouble actually doing that for the better part of a decade now? Or does this actually pose any systemic long-term risks if the Fed's balance sheet remains this bloated?
This is an issue that, you know, vexes market participants and policymakers a lot. Whatever gains we have seen in the asset markets, has it really been driven by liquidity? And by liquidity, do we really mean the balance sheet expansion of the Federal Reserve? Or has it been delivered by, you know, low interest rates, which is independent of the quantitative work that the Federal Reserve and other central banks do? I think the risk of some quantitative tightening translating into massive asset price sell-off, I think is unlikely. I think there is a lot of excess balances sitting in the balance sheet of both the central bank and commercial banks, which has not really gone anywhere, and they earn practically nothing. So whether they are cash earning nothing or some bonds yielding virtually nothing, it doesn't really matter. It's just an accounting entity as far as I'm concerned. So therefore, if the Fed is swapping very low yielding bonds with virtually no yielding cash, does it really make any difference as far as the market is concerned? I don't think so. So some cash will go out of the system. It'll go back to the Federal Reserve's balance sheet. Federal Reserve might even, you know, retire those cash. As a result, the overall money available to the global economy would be a little less. But a lot of that money was really doing nothing. So therefore, I don't think it takes major wind out of the sail of the global economy. Now, if it was the case that despite some rate hikes and some quantitative tightening, a year from now, we're having this conversation and inflation is stubbornly at 5-6%, the Fed might have to do very aggressive quantitative tightening. Then we would have a different discussion about the implication for asset markets. But over the next 12 months, I don't think the quantitative tightening will feature prominently as a driver of global markets or economies.
I have a lot to look forward to then with regards to what's in store for the Federal Reserve and the global economy and their linkages. Tamer Big, Chief Economist for DBS, thank you so much for joining us today on Money FM 89.3 to discuss the Fed's recent decision and the start of their tightening path. As always, I wish you and your loved ones continued health and safety during these times. We look forward to next time you can join us the show. Meanwhile, do stay safe, sir, and I hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.
Thank you.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.